She pasted a smile back onto her face. And while I wanted to know what was troubling her, because in the end, all those troubles also fell on me, she was right. I simply couldn't deal with it today. It seemed she hardly could either. "Do you ever regret it?" I asked, seeing the sadness in her eyes despite her efforts. Entering selection and ending up queen? I was grateful she didn't just immediately say yes or no, but actually considered the question. "I don't regret marrying your father. I sometimes wonder about the life I would have had without the selection, or if I had still come to the palace but lost. I think I would have been fine. Not unhappy exactly, but not aware of what else there could have been for me. But the path to him was a difficult one, mostly because I didn't want to walk it. At all?" She shook her head. "It wasn't my idea to enter the selection." My mouth fell open. She'd never told me that. "Whose was it?"
"That's not important," she answered quickly. "But I can tell you that I understand your reservations. I think the process will teach you a lot about yourself. I hope you'll trust me on this."
"It'd be a lot easier to trust you if I knew you were doing this for me, and not to buy yourself some peace." The words came out sharper than I meant them to. She took a deep breath.
"I know you think this is selfish, but you'll see. One day the welfare of the country will be on your shoulders, and you'll be surprised at what you try in order to keep it all from crumbling. I never thought we'd have another selection, but plans change when that much is demanded of you."
"Plenty is demanded of me now," I shot back.
"One, watch your tone," she warned. "And two, you only see a fraction of the work. You have no idea how much pressure is placed on your father."
I sat there silent. I wanted to leave. If she didn't like my tone, then why did she push me?
"Edlin," she began quietly. "The timing of this happened to fall when it did. But honestly, sooner or later I would have done something."
"What do you mean?"
"You seem shut off in a way, disconnected from your people. I know you're constantly worried about the demands you will face as queen, but it's time you see the needs of others."
"You don't think I do that now?" Did she see what I did all day?
She pressed her lips together. "No, honey, not if it comes before your comfort."
I wanted to scream at her, and at Dad, too. Sure, I took shelter in long baths or a drink with dinner. I didn't think that was too much to ask for, considering what I sacrificed.
"I didn't realize you thought I was so flawed."
I stood, turning away.
"Edlin, that's not what I'm saying."
"It is. That's fine."
I made my way to the door. The accusation filled me with so much rage I could barely stand it. "Edlin, darling, we want you to be the best queen you can be. That's all," she pleaded.
"I will," I answered, one foot in the hallway. "And I certainly don't need a boy to show me how to do that." I tried to calm myself before walking away. It felt like the universe was plotting against me, its arms taking turns swatting me down. I repeated in my head that it was only 3 months, only 3 months, until I heard someone crying.
"Are you sure?"
It sounded like General Ledger. "I talked with her this morning. She decided to keep it." Miss Lucy pulled in a jagged breath.
"Did you tell her that we could give that baby everything? That we had more money than we could ever spend? That we'd love it no matter its faults?"
General Leisure's words fell out in a whispered rush. "All that and more," Miss Lucy insisted. "I knew there was a huge chance of the baby being born with mental issues. I told her we'd be able to tend to any need he had, that the queen herself would see to it. She said she talked with her family, and they agreed to help her, and that she never really wanted to let the baby go in the first place, She only looked into adoption because she thought she'd be alone. She apologized, like that could fix it. Miss Lucy sniffed as if she was trying to quiet her sobs. I drew close to the corner of the passage, listening.
I'm so sorry, Lucy.
There's nothing to be sorry for. It's not your fault. She said those words kindly, bravely. I think we need to accept that it's over. Years of treatments, so many miscarriages, 3 failed adoptions. We just need to let it go. There was a long silence before General Ledger answered.
If that's what you think is best.
I do, she said, her voice sounding assertive before she sank into tears again. I still can't believe I'll never be a mother. A second later, her cries were muffled, and I knew her husband had pulled her to his chest, trying to comfort her as best he could. All these years, I had thought the Ledgers had chosen to be a childless couple. Miss Lucy's struggles had never made it into conversation when I was in the room, and she seemed content enough to play with us as children and send us on our way. I'd never considered that it might have been an unfortunate circumstance thrust on them. Was my mother right? Was I not as observant or caring as I thought? Miss Lucy was one of my favorite people in the world. Shouldn't I have been able to see how sad she was? Chapter 6 35 massive baskets sat in the office, filled with what must have been tens of thousands of entries, all left in their envelopes to protect the gentleman's anonymity. I tried to give off an air of eager anticipation for the sake of the camera, but I felt like I might vomit into one of those baskets at any given moment. That would be one way to narrow the pool. Dad placed a hand on my back.
All right, Edie. Just walk to each basket and select an envelope. I'll hold them for you so your hands don't get full. Then we'll open them live tonight on the report. It's that easy.
For something so simple, it seemed incredibly daunting. Then again, I'd felt overwhelmed since we announced the selection, so this shouldn't have been a surprise. I adjusted my favorite tiara and smoothed out my iridescent gray dress. I wanted to make sure I looked positively radiant today, and when I'd checked my reflection before heading downstairs, even I was a little intimidated by the girl in the mirror. So, I literally select each one myself? I whispered, hoping the cameras weren't watching too closely. He gave me a tiny smile and spoke softly.
It's a privilege I never had. Go ahead, love.
What do you mean?
Later. Go on now.
He gestured toward the piles and piles of entries. I took a deep breath. I could do this. No matter what people were hoping for, I had a plan, and it was foolproof. I would walk away from this unscathed. Just a few months of my life, nothing in the grand scheme of things, and then I'd go back to the work of becoming queen, alone. So why are you stalling? Shut up. I walked to the first basket, with a label declaring the contestants were all from Clermont. I pulled one from the side. Cameras flashed, and the handful of people in the room actually applauded. Mom wrapped her arm around Aaron in excitement, and he sneakily made a face at me. Miss Marley sighed with delight, but Miss Lucy was absent. Austin was missing too, which was no surprise, but Caden stood by, observing the whole thing with interest. I used different techniques for different bins. On one, I plucked the envelope from the very top. On the next, I buried my arm to fish out my choice. The onlookers seemed incredibly amused when I got to Carolina, Mom's home province, picked up 2 envelopes, and weighed them in my hands for a few seconds before dropping one back in. I placed the last entry in Dad's hands, and there was more clapping and camera flashes. I gave what I hoped was an enthusiastic smile before the reporters all exited the room, off to give their exclusive stories. Aaron and Caden left, joking as they went, and Mom gave me a quick kiss on the head before she followed them. We were speaking again, but didn't have much to say.
"You did marvelously,"
Dad said once we were alone, a genuine tone of awe in his voice.
"Really, I understand how nerve-wracking this can feel, but you were wonderful."
"How do you know, though?" I placed my hands on my hips. "If you didn't pick out the entries yourself." He swallowed.
"You've heard the broad strokes of how your mother and I found each other. But there are tiny details that are best left in the drawer. The only reason I am telling you this is because I think it will help you to see how fortunate you are."
I nodded, not sure where he was going. He took a breath.
"My selection wasn't a farce, but it wasn't that far off. My father chose all the contestants by hand, picking young women with political alliances, influential families, or enough charm to make the entire country worship the ground they walked on. He knew he had to make it varied enough to seem legit, so there were 3 fives thrown into the mix, but nothing below that. The fives were meant to be little more than throwaways to keep anyone from being suspicious."
I realized my mouth was gaping open and shut it immediately. "Mom?"
"Was meant to be gone almost immediately. Truth be told, she barely made it past my father's attempts to sway my opinion or remove her himself. And look at her now."
His whole face changed.
"Though it was hard for me to imagine, she is even more beloved as queen than my mother. She has made 4 beautiful, intelligent, strong children, and she has been the source of every happiness in my life."
He flipped idly through the envelopes in his hands.
"I'm not sure if fate or destiny is real, but I can tell you that sometimes the very thing you've been hoping for will walk through the door, determined to fend you off. And still, somehow, you will find that you are enough."
Until then, I'd never had a reason to doubt that I'd seen the whole picture of my parents' love story. But between Dad's confession that Mom wasn't even supposed to be a choice, and Mom's revelation that she didn't want to be a part of the choosing in the first place, I wondered how they had managed to find each other at all. It was clear from Dad's expression, he could barely believe it himself.
"You're going to do great, you know?"
he said, beaming proudly. "What makes you think so?"
"You're like your mother, and my mother too. You're determined. And perhaps most important, you don't like to fail. I know this will all work out, if only because you'll refuse to allow it to go any other way."
I nearly told him. Nearly confessed I had come up with pages of ideas to drive these boys away. Because he was right. I didn't want to fail. But for me, failure meant having my life led by someone else. "I'm sure everything will turn out just as it should," I said, a whisper of regret hanging in my voice. He lifted a hand and placed it on my cheek.
"It usually does."
Chapter 7. In the studio, the set was slightly rearranged. Typically, Aaron and I were the only ones who sat on camera with my parents, but tonight, Caden and Austin were given seats on stage as well. Dad's officials were in a cluster of seats on the opposite side, and in the middle, a bowl waited with all the envelopes I'd picked earlier. Beside it was an empty bowl for me to place them in as they were opened. I had reservations about reading out the names myself, but at least it gave the appearance of control. I liked that. Behind the cameras, seats were filled with other members of our household. General Ledger was there, kissing Miss Lucy on her forehead and whispering something to her. It had been a few days since I'd overheard their conversation, and I still felt awful for her. Of all the people in the world who ought to be parents, it was the Ledgers. And of all the people in the world who ought to have the ability to fix things, it was the Shreves. Still, I was lost as to how to help. Miss Marley was shushing Josie, probably for laughing at a joke Josie made herself that lacked any level of humor. I'd never understand how someone so wonderful had birthed such awful people. My favorite tiara? The one I was wearing? It was only my favorite because Josie bent my first favorite and lost 2 stones out of the second. She wasn't even supposed to touch them, ever. Beside her, Kyle was reading a book, because clearly, everything going on in our country and home was too boring for him. What an ingrate. He peeked up from his book, saw me watching, made a face, and went back to reading. Why was he even here? How are you feeling? Mom was suddenly beside me, her arm around my shoulder. Fine. She smiled. There's no way you're fine. This is terrifying. Why, yes, yes it is. How kind of you to subject me to such a delightful thing. Her giggle was tentative, testing to see if we were on good terms again. I don't think you're flawed, she said quietly. I think you're 1,000 wonderful things. One day you'll know what it's like to worry for your children. And I worry for you more than the others. You're not just any girl, Edlin. You're the girl. And I want everything for you. I wasn't sure what to say. I didn't want for us to fight right now. Not with something this big coming. Her arm was still on my shoulder, so I wrapped mine around her back, and she kissed my hair just under my tiara. I feel very uncomfortable, I confessed. Just remember how the boys are feeling. This is huge for them as well, and the country will be so pleased. I concentrated on my breathing. 3 months. Freedom. A piece of cake. I'm proud of you, she said, giving me a final squeeze. Good luck. She walked away to greet Dad, and Aaron strode toward me, smoothing out his suit. I cannot believe this is actually happening, he said, genuine excitement coloring his tone. I'm really looking forward to the company. What, is Kyle not enough for you? I darted my eyes at him again, and he still had his nose buried. I don't know what you have against Kyle. He's really smart. Is that code for boring? No, but I'm excited to meet different people. I'm not. I crossed my arms, partly frustrated, partly protecting myself. Aw, come on, sis. This is going to be fun. He surveyed the room and dropped his voice to a whisper. I can only imagine what you have in store for those poor saps. I tried to suppress my smile, but I was anticipating watching them squirm. He picked up one of the envelopes and bopped me on the nose with it. Get ready now. If you have a basic grasp of the English language, you should manage this part just fine. Such a pain, I said, punching his arm. I love you. I know you do. Don't worry. This is going to be easy. We were instructed to take our seats, and Aaron threw the envelope back down, taking my hand to walk me to my place. The cameras started rolling, and Dad began the report with an update about an approaching trade agreement with New Asia. We worked so closely with them now, it was hard to imagine a time we were actually at war. He touched on the growing immigration laws, and all his advisors spoke, including Lady Bryce. It simultaneously felt like it dragged on forever and passed in an instant. When Gavril announced my name, it took me a second to remember exactly what I was supposed to be doing. But I stood and walked across the stage and assumed my place in front of the microphone. I flashed a smile and looked straight into the camera, knowing every TV in Ilia was on tonight. I'm sure you're all as excited as I am, so let's skip ceremony and get right to what everyone is dying to hear. Ladies and gentlemen, here are the 35 young men invited to participate in this groundbreaking selection. I reached into the bowl and pulled out the first envelope. From Likely, I read, pausing to open it. Mr. McKendrick Shepherd. I held up his photograph, and the room applauded as I set it in the other bowl and moved back for the next entry. From Zuni, Mr. Winslow Fields. There was a smattering of applause after every name. Holden Messenger. Kesley Timber. Hale Garner. Edwin Bishop. It felt like I had opened at least 100 envelopes by the time my hands reached for the final one. My cheeks hurt, and I was hoping Mom wouldn't judge me if I skipped dinner and ate alone in my room. I really thought I'd earned it. Ah, from Angelus. I ripped at the paper, pulling out the final entry. I knew my smile must have faltered, but really, it couldn't be helped. Mr. Kyle Woodwork. I heard the reactions around the room. Several gasps, a handful of laughs, but most obviously, I could hear Kyle's reaction. He dropped his book. I pulled in a breath. There you have it. Tomorrow, advisors will be sent out to begin prepping these 35 candidates for the adventure before them. And in one short week, they will arrive at the palace. Until then, join me in congratulating them. I began the applause. The room followed, and I retreated to my seat, trying not to look as sick as I felt. Kyle's name being in there shouldn't have shaken me the way it did. At the end of the day, none of those boys stood a chance. But something about this felt wrong. The second Gavril finished signing off, everyone erupted. Mom and Dad walked to the woodworks. I followed right behind them, Josie's laughter acting as a homing beacon.
I didn't do it,
Kyle insisted, as I approached. Our eyes met. I could see he was as upset as I was.
Does that even matter? Mom said. Anyone of age is allowed to put his name in.
Dad nodded.
That's true. It's a bit of a strange situation, but there's nothing illegal about it. But I don't want to be a part of this.
Kyle looked at Dad imploringly. Who put your name in? I asked. Kyle shook his head.
I don't know. It has to be a mistake. Why would I enter when I don't want to compete?
Mom's eyes were on General Ledger, and it looked almost like they were smiling. But there wasn't anything funny about this.
Excuse me, I protested. This is unacceptable. Is anyone going to do anything about it?
Pick someone else,
Kyle offered. General Ledger shook his head.
Edelin announced your name in front of the country. You're the candidate from Angelus. That's right,
Dad agreed.
Reading the names publicly makes it official. We can't replace you.
Kyle rolled his eyes. He did that a lot.
Then Edelin can eliminate me the first day.
And send you where? I asked. You're already home.
Aaron chuckled.
Sorry, he said, noticing our glares. That's not going to sit well with the others.
Send me away,
Kyle offered, sounding thrilled.
For the 100th time, Kyle, you're not leaving,
Miss Marley said, in the firmest voice I'd ever heard her use. She put her hand to her temple, and Mr. Carter wrapped an arm around her, speaking into her ear.
You want to go somewhere else? I asked, incredulous. Isn't a palace good enough for you?
It's not mine, he said, raising his voice. And quite frankly, I'm tired of it. I'm over the rules, I'm over being a guest, and I'm so over your bratty attitude.
I gasped as Miss Marley thwacked her son over the head.
Apologize, she commanded.
Kyle pressed his lips together, looking at the ground. I crossed my arms. He wasn't leaving until I got an apology. I'd get it one way or another. Finally, after a forceful shake of his head, he muttered it under his breath. I looked away, hardly impressed with his efforts.
We'll move forward as planned, Dad said. This is a selection just like any of the others. It's about choices. Right now, Kyle is one option of many, and Edelin could certainly do worse. Thanks, Dad.
I quickly checked Kyle's expression. He was staring at the floor, seeming embarrassed and angry.
For now, I think we should all get some food and celebrate. This is a very exciting day.
That's right, General Ledger agreed. Let's eat.
I'm tired, I said, turning. I'll be in my room. I didn't wait for approval. I didn't owe anyone anything after tonight. I was giving them everything they wanted. Chapter 8. I avoided everyone over the weekend, and no one seemed bothered by it. Not even Mom. With the names out there, the selection felt that much more real, and I was saddened by the dwindling days of solitude. The Monday before the candidates arrived, I finally rejoined humanity and made my way to the women's room. Miss Lucy was there, seeming back to her usual, cheerful self. I kept wishing I could do something to help her. I knew a puppy wasn't a person, but so far my only idea was to get her a pet. Mom was talking to Miss Marley, and they waved me over the moment I was through the doorway. Miss Marley put her hand on mine as I sat. I wanted to explain about Kyle. He doesn't want to leave because of you. He's been talking about going for a long time, and I thought the semester away would put an end to it. I can't bear to let him go.
You'll have to let him make his own choice sooner or later, Mom urged. Funny, since she was the one trying to marry her daughter to a stranger.
I don't understand it. Josie never talks about leaving.
I rolled my eyes. Of course she doesn't. But what can you do? You can't force him to stay.
Mom poured a cup of tea and set it in front of me. I'm hiring another tutor. This one has hands-on experience and can give Kyle more than a book could, so I think I've bought some more time. I keep hoping. Aunt May burst into the room, looking as if she stepped out of a magazine. I bolted over to her and gave her a bone-crushing hug.
Your Highness, she greeted.
Shut up. She laughed and pulled me back, grasping me by both shoulders and looking into my eyes.
I want to hear everything about this election. How are you feeling? Some of those pictures were cute. Are you already in love?
Not even close, I replied with a laugh.
Well, give him a few days.
That's how it was with Aunt May. A new love every few months or so. She treated the four of us, and our cousins, Astra and Leo, like we were her kids since she never settled down herself. I particularly enjoyed her company, and the palace always felt more exciting when she was here.
How long are you staying? Mom asked, and May held my hand as we crossed back to her.
Leaving again Thursday.
I gasped.
I know. I'm going to miss all the excitement.
She pouted at me.
But Leo has a game Friday afternoon, and Astra's dance recital is on Saturday. And I promised I'd be there. She's really coming along.
Aunt May said, turning to Mom.
You can tell her mother was an artist.
They shared a smile.
I wish I could go, Mom lamented.
Why don't we? I suggested, picking up some cookies for my tea. Aunt May gave me a questioning look.
You do realize you already have plans for this weekend, right? Big plans, life-changing plans.
I shrugged. I'm not too worried about missing them.
Edelin,
Mom reprimanded.
Sorry. It's just overwhelming. I like the way things are now.
Where are the pictures?
May asked. In my room, on my desk. I'm trying to learn the names, but I haven't gotten very far yet. May waved her arm at a maid.
Dearie, will you go up to the princess's room and grab the stack of selection candidates' forms off her desk?
The maid beamed and curtsied, and I suspected she'd be thumbing through the pile on her way down. Mom leaned in toward her sister.
I just want to remind you that one,
They're off limits. And two, even if they weren't, you're twice their age.
Miss Marley and I laughed, while Miss Lucy only smiled. She was much easier on Aunt May than the rest of us.
Don't tease her, Miss Lucy protested. I'm sure she has the best intentions.
Thank you, Lucy. This isn't for me, it's for Edelyn, she vowed. We're going to help her get a head start.
That's not really how it works.
Mom leaned back, drinking her tea with an air of superiority. Miss Marley laughed loudly.
This from you. Do we need to remind you of your head start?
What? I asked, shocked. How many details had my parents omitted from their story? What does she mean?
Mom put down her tea and held up a hand defensively. I accidentally ran into your father the night before the selection started, and I will have you know, she said, more to Miss Marley than to me. I could easily have been kicked out for that. It wasn't exactly the first impression you hope for.
I sat there gaping. Mom, exactly how many rules did you break?
Her eyes darted up as if she was trying to tally them.
Okay, you know what? Go through the pictures all you want. You win.
Aunt May laughed with delight, and I tried to memorize the way her head sloped gracefully to one side and her eyes sparkled. Everything about her was so effortlessly glamorous, and I adored her with a love close to what I held for my mother. While I felt a little slighted by Josie being my closest female playmate growing up, Mom's circle of friends more than made up for it. Aunt May's spirit, Miss Lucy's kindness, Miss Marley's buoyancy, and Mom's strength were invaluable and more enlightening than any class I ever took. The maid came back, placing the pile of forms and pictures in front of me. To my surprise, it was Miss Marley who grabbed the first handful of applications to graze through. Aunt May was close behind, and while Mom didn't pick up any herself, she did lean over Miss Marley's shoulder to peek. Miss Lucy looked like she was trying not to be curious, but in the end had a pile in her own lap as well.
Oh, he looks promising.
Aunt May shoved a picture in front of me. I stared into a set of dark eyes embedded deep in ebony skin. His hair was cropped short and he wore a bright smile.
Batten Trains, 19 from Sumner.
He's handsome, Mom gushed.
Well, obviously, May agreed. And with a last name like Trains, he probably comes from a family of sevens. It says here he's in his first year studying advertising. That means either he or someone in his family is very determined.
True, Miss Marley agreed. That's no small feat. I pulled a couple of the forms over, picking through them.
So, how are you feeling? Aunt May asked. Is everything ready to go?
I think so. I flipped over an application, scanning for something that might seem remotely interesting. I just didn't care. For a while, everyone was in such a tizzy, I thought it might never end. It looks like all the rooms are finished. The food calculations have been made, and now that the list is official, travel arrangements should be done by tomorrow.
You sound positively thrilled, May teased, poking me.
I sighed, then looked pointedly at Mom.
You might as well know, this isn't completely about me.
What do you mean, honey? Miss Lucy asked, setting her pile of papers on her lap, looking between Mom and me with concern.
Of course, we're hoping Edelyn will find someone worthy of settling down with, Mom began shrewdly. But, as it happens, this is coming at a time when we were in need of a plan to calm the unrest over the castes.
Ames, May said, your daughter is a decoy?
No.
Yes,
I muttered. Aunt May rubbed my back, and it made me feel so much better to have her there.
Sooner or later,
We would have needed to look at suitors, and this isn't binding. Edelin has an agreement with Maxon that if she doesn't fall in love, then the whole thing is off. However, yes, Edelin is doing her job as a member of the royal family by creating a little diversion while the population cools down and we investigate what more we could do. And, might I add, it's working.
It is?
I asked. Haven't you looked at the papers? You're the center of everything right now. Local papers are interviewing their candidates, and some provinces are holding parties, hoping their suitor will be the winner. Magazines are talking about possible frontrunners, and I saw a segment on the news last night about a few girls who were forming fan clubs and wearing shirts with the names of their favorites plastered all over them. The selection has consumed the entire country.
It's true, Miss Marley confirmed. Kyle living in the palace is no longer a secret.
Have they also discovered he has no interest in participating? I asked, more irritation in my voice than I intended. Miss Marley wasn't to blame for this whole debacle.
No, she answered with a laugh. Again, though, that has nothing to do with you.
I smiled back. Miss Marley, you heard Mom. He doesn't need to worry. I think Kyle and I already know we wouldn't be that great of a match, and there's a chance I'll walk away from this without a fiancé anyway.
A 100% chance, to be more accurate.
Don't worry about him hurting my feelings, because I'm just seeing how it goes. I replied, as if this was normal, bringing in a slew of boys for me to pick from. I'm not upset.
You said it's taken over everything, May began, concerned. Do you think it will last?
I think it'll hold things off long enough for the people to forget some of the unhappiness that's been so prevalent lately, and for us to come up with a way to address issues if they pop up again.
Mom sounded confident.
When they pop up, I corrected. My life might be exciting for a while, but eventually people will start worrying about themselves again. I went back to looking at the pictures, almost pitying these boys. They had no chance of winning, and no idea they were part of a public distraction.
This is strange, I said, picking up one of the applications.
I don't want to be judgmental, but look at this. I caught 3 different spelling mistakes on this one.
Mom took the form.
It's possible he was nervous.
Or an idiot, I offered.
May chuckled.
Don't be so harsh, sweetie. It's scary on their end, too.
Mom handed me the form, and I clipped it back to a picture of a boy with a very innocent face and a head full of wild blonde curls.
Wait, are you scared?
Aunt May asked, worry on my behalf coating her voice.
No, of course not.
Her expression relaxed back into its normal, beautiful, carefree state.
Can't imagine you being scared of anything.
She winked at me. It was comforting that at least one of us thought so. Chapter 9. When they started pouring in, I fled to my room, sketching in the sunlight on my balcony. Too many boisterous laughs and overly enthusiastic greetings. I wondered how long that camaraderie would last. This was a competition, after all. I mentally added finding ways to pit them against one another to my to-do list.
I think we should put my hair up, Nina. I want to look mature today.
Excellent choice, my lady.
She scrubbed at my nails.
Any thoughts on a dress?
I'm thinking evening gown. Black would do nicely. She chuckled,
looking to scare them.
I couldn't hold back my sly smile. Only a little. We giggled together, and I was glad to have her with me. I was going to need her soothing words and calming touches over the next few weeks. After my hair was dry, we braided and knotted it up like a crown, which only made my tiara look better. I found the black dress I'd worn for a New Year's Eve party last year. It was covered in lace and fitted to the knee before it flared out to the floor. An oval of skin was exposed across my back, and the tiny butterfly sleeves set low across my shoulders. I had to admit it looked even more beautiful in the sun than it did under candles. My clock struck one, and I made my way downstairs. We had converted one of the libraries on the fourth floor into a men's parlor, so the selected could gather and relax during their time in the palace. It was about the same size as the women's room, and had plenty of places to sit, lots of books, and two televisions. I was heading to that area of the palace now. We had decided that the suitors would be brought out, one at a time, to greet me, and then escorted to the men's parlor to get to know one another. I saw a cluster of people down the hallway, including my parents and General Ledger, and made my way toward them, trying not to let my nerves show. Dad looked stunned, and Mom covered her mouth as I approached. "Edelyn, you seem so grown up." She sighed as she touched my cheek and shoulder and hair, not fixing anything, just checking. "Probably because I am." She nodded to herself, tears in her eyes. "You look the part. I never really thought I passed for a queen, but you, wholly perfect." "Stop it, Mom. You're completely adored. You and Dad brought peace to the country. I haven't done anything." She placed a finger under my chin. "Not yet, but you're too determined to accomplish nothing." Before I could respond, Dad approached us.
"Ready?"
"Yes," I answered, steadying myself. That wasn't the pep talk I'd been envisioning. I don't intend to eliminate anyone just yet. I figure everyone deserves at least a day. Dad smiled.
"I think that's wise."
I took a breath. "All right then, let's begin."
"Do you want us to stay or go?"
Mom asked. I considered. "Go. For now, anyway."
"As you wish,"
Dad said.
"General Ledger and a few guards will be nearby. If you need anything, simply ask. We want you to have a wonderful day."
"Thank you, Daddy."
"No,"
he said, embracing me.
"Thank you."
He pulled away and offered his arm to Mom. They walked off, and I felt like I could see their happiness glowing simply in the way they moved.
"Your Highness,"
General Ledger said gently. I turned to see his smiling face.
"Nervous?"
I shook my head slightly, almost convincing myself. "Bring the first one out." He nodded before making eye contact with a butler down the hall. A boy walked out of one of the libraries, straightening his cufflinks as he approached. He was lean and a little on the short side, but he had a pleasant enough face. He stopped in front of me, bowing.
"Fox Wesley, Your Highness."
I tilted my head in greeting. "A pleasure." He took in a breath.
"You are so beautiful."
"So I've been told. You can go now." I swept my arm across my body, pointing to the men's parlor. Fox furrowed his eyebrows before giving me another bow and leaving. The next boy was in front of me, tipping his head to greet me.
"Hail, Garner, Your Highness."
"Welcome, sir."
"Thank you so much for letting us into your home. I hope to prove myself worthy of your hand more and more each day."
I cocked my head curiously.
"Really? And how will you do that today?"
He smiled.
"Well, today I would let you know I come from an excellent family. My father used to be a two."
"Is that all?" Undeterred, he went on.
"I think it's pretty impressive."
"Not as impressive as having a father who used to be a one." His face faltered. "You may go." He bowed and started to walk away. After a few steps, he looked back.
"I'm sorry to have offended you, Your Highness."
And his face was so sad that I nearly told him he hadn't. But that wouldn't fall in line with my plan for the day. A parade of endlessly unmemorable boys crossed my path. A little past the halfway point, Kyle came through the line, stopping in front of me. For once, his hair was styled in such a way that I could actually see his eyes.
Your Highness,
he greeted. It's royal pain in the ass to you, sir, he chuckled. So, how have they been treating you? Your mom says the papers spilled that you lived at the palace.
He shook his head in shock. I thought that it would be an immediate invitation to be pummeled by a bunch of jealous meatheads, but it turns out, most of them see me as an asset.
Oh?
They assume I know everything about you already. I've been bombarded with questions all morning.
And what are you telling them exactly? He smirked, his smile slightly crooked.
What a pleasure you are, of course.
Right. I rolled my eyes, not believing him for a second. You can go ahead.
Listen, I want to tell you I'm sorry again for calling you bratty.
I shrugged. You were upset. He nodded, accepting that excuse.
Still, it's unfair all the same. I mean, don't get me wrong, you are exceedingly spoiled.
He shook his head.
But you're tough because you have to be. You're going to be queen. And while I've seen things unfold in the palace, I've never actually had the weight of your work on me. It's not fair for me to judge.
I sighed. The polite thing would be to thank him. So fine. I would be polite. Thank you.
Sure.
There was a long pause. The men's parlor is that way, I said, pointing.
Right. See you later, I guess.
I smiled to myself, noticing as he left that he held a notebook in the hand he'd kept behind his back. Kyle looked better than usual, thanks to the mandatory makeover, but he was still an annoying little bookworm. It was clear that the gentleman after him was anything but. His caramel-colored hair was brushed back, and he walked with his hands in his pockets, as if he'd strolled down these halls before. His demeanor actually threw me for a second. Was he here to meet me, or was I here to meet him?
Your Majesty,
he greeted silkily as he sank into a bow. Highness, I corrected.
No, it's just Ean.
He cocked one cheek up into a smile.
That was awful, I said with a laugh. It was a risk I had to take. There are 34 other guys here. How else was I supposed to get you to remember me?
His gaze was intent, and if I hadn't dealt with so many politicians in my life, I might have been charmed.
Very nice to meet you, sir. And you, Your Highness. Hope to see you soon.
He was followed by a boy with a drawl so thick I had to really focus to catch his words. Another asked when he was going to be paid. There was one who was sweating so much I had to call over a butler to give me a towel for my hand once he left, and the one after him blatantly stared at my chest for the entirety of our meeting. It was an ongoing pageant of disasters. General Ledger came to my side.
In case you've lost count, this is the last one.
I threw back my head in relief.
Thank goodness.
I don't think your parents will want to ask you for a follow-up, but you should go to them when you're done.
I gave him a look. If you insist. He chuckled.
Go easy on them. Your father has a lot to deal with right now.
He's got a lot to deal with? Did you see that one guy sweat?
Can you blame him? You're the princess. You have the capacity to sentence him to death if you wanted.
General Ledger had these sparkling green eyes that shimmered with mischief. One of those men who grew even more handsome as he aged. I knew it for a fact because Miss Lucy once showed me a picture of their wedding day, and he seriously only got better looking. Sometimes, if he was tired or if the weather was bad, he walked with a limp, but it never slowed him. Maybe it was because I knew how much Miss Lucy loved him, but he always seemed like a safe place. If I hadn't been nervous about him siding with Mom and Dad, I would have asked for his advice on how to get these boys to plead to go home. Something in his eyes made me think he'd know exactly how to do it. A few of them make me uneasy, I confessed. The smooth words, the leering eyes. Even though I grew up knowing I was special, I didn't like being looked at as a prize. His expression grew sympathetic.
It's a strange situation, I know, but you never have to be alone with anyone you don't like. You're free to dismiss someone for nothing more than a feeling. And even the dumbest of them wouldn't be stupid enough to hurt you,
he promised.
Trust me, if someone did, I'd make sure they never walked again.
He gave me a wink before moving away and signaling for the final contestant to be brought out. I was a bit confused when it wasn't one person but two. The first was dressed in a crisp suit, but the second wore only a button-up shirt. The slightly drabber one walked a few steps behind the other, his eyes trained on the floor. The first was nothing but smiles, and it looked like someone had tried to tame his hair and failed.
"Hello, Highness," he greeted,
his voice thick with an accent I couldn't identify.
"How are you?"
Confused but disarmed by his incredibly warm smile, I answered. "I'm well. It's been a long day. I'm sure it has been for you, too." Behind him, the other boy leaned forward and whispered something in garbled words I couldn't understand. The first nodded.
"Oh, yes, yes, but it's nice to meeting you."
He used his hands as he spoke, trying to get the words across with his gestures. I leaned in, not understanding and somehow hoping a closer proximity would clear up his accent.
"Excuse me?"
The boy behind him spoke up.
"He says it's a pleasure to meet you."
I squinted, still confused.
"My name is Henry."
He bowed in greeting, and I could see in his face that he meant to do this earlier and forgot. I didn't want to be rude, so I nodded my head in acknowledgement. "Hello, Henry." He lit up at the sound of his name, and he stood there, looking back and forth between the gentleman behind him and me. "I can't help but notice your accent," I remarked in what I hoped was a friendly tone. "Where do you come from?"
Swind,
he began, but turned to the guest with him. He nodded, carrying on in Henry's place.
"Sir Henry was born in Swendway, so he has a very strong Finnish accent."
"Oh," I replied. "And does he speak much English?" Henry piped up.
"English? No, no."
He didn't seem embarrassed, though. Instead, he laughed it off. "How are we supposed to get to know each other?" The translator turned to Henry.
"Mitten sa dun man dui sansa?"
Henry pointed to the translator, who answered,
"Through me, it seems."
"Okay, well, I wasn't prepared for this. Was it rude for me to dismiss him? Interacting with these people one-on-one was going to be awkward enough. I wasn't prepared for a third person. In that instant, Henry's application popped back into my mind. That was why some of the words were spelled wrong. He was guessing at them. "Thank you. It's very nice to meet you too, Henry." He smiled at his name, and I got the feeling the rest of the words didn't even matter. I couldn't send him away. "The men's parlor is over here." Henry bowed as his translator mumbled the instructions, and they walked away together. "General Ledger?" I called, burying my face in my hands.
"Yes, Your Highness."
"Tell Dad I'll update him in an hour. I need to take a walk." Chapter 10. We made it through the first day, the first dinner, and the first evening without further incident. As the cameras circled the dining hall, I could hear the men working them sigh in boredom. I didn't address anyone in the group, and the boys themselves seemed too nervous even to speak to one another. I could hear Dad's thoughts as clearly as if they were my own. This is dull. No one will want to see this. How will this buy us a single second, let alone 3 months? He glanced over at me a few times, begging me with his eyes to do something, anything, to make this worth enduring. I was at war with myself. I didn't want to fail him, but any warmth on my part today would set a bad precedent. They needed to know that I wasn't going to fawn over them. I told myself not to worry. In the morning, everything would change. The following day, the boys were dressed in their best, ready for the parade. An army of people swarmed on the front lawn, ready to prep us to go beyond the gates. Dad was proud of this idea, my biggest contribution to the selection so far. I thought it would be exciting to have a short parade, something never done before. I felt certain this would give everyone something to talk about.
"Good morning, Your Highness," one of the boys greeted.
I remembered Ian in an instant, and after yesterday, it was no surprise he was the first one to speak to me. "And to you?" I walked on, not slowing, though many of the others bowed or called my name. I only stopped to be briefed by one of the guards heading up the process.
"It's a short loop, Your Highness. At under 10 miles an hour, it should take 20 to 30 minutes to make our way around. Guards are lining the route for good measure, but everyone is so excited it should be a very fun event."
I clasped my hands calmly in front of me. "Thank you, officer. I appreciate your work to make this happen." He pressed his lips together, attempting to hide his proud smile.
"Anything for you, Your Highness."
He went to walk away, but I called him back. The officer puffed out his chest, so pleased to be needed again. I looked around at the swarm of young men, dazed by their number, trying to make the smartest choice. I saw Henry's wild hair blowing in the wind and smiled to myself. He stood on the outside of a group, listening to what they were saying and nodding, though I was sure he couldn't understand anything going on around him. I didn't see his translator, and wondered if Henry had banished him for the day. I searched again, hunting, and found one boy who really knew how to wear a suit. It wasn't that he looked like a model, but more like he understood the fine art of tailoring and had set his butler to work immediately on his choice for the day. Also, I couldn't get over his two-toned shoes. Thank goodness I remembered his name. "When I'm up there, I'd like Mr. Garner on one side and Mr. Jacopi on the other, please."
"Certainly, Your Highness. I'll take care of it."
I turned and looked at the float. They'd taken the frame of one of the Christmas floats and adorned it with thousands of summer blooms. It was festive and beautiful, and the scent of the flowers permeated the air. I inhaled, and the clean, sweet smell soothed every piece of me. Over the walls, I could hear the shouts of people who had lined up for this moment. Whatever ways I'd failed last night would be more than forgotten today.
"All right, gentlemen,"
General Ledger's voice boomed over the din.
"I need you all to line up along the path and we'll get you up safely."
Mom was in the back with Dad, who had picked up a few stray flowers that had blown off the float and stuck them in her hair. She looked at him with absolute adoration as he stepped away with his camera. He circled the group, snapping pictures. He got plenty of the boys, some of the fountain, and a couple of me. "Dad," I whispered, a little embarrassed. He winked and backed away, still taking shots, but in a less obvious way.
"Your Highness,"
General Ledger said, placing a hand on my back.
"We're going to send you up last. I heard you wanted Henry and Hale beside you, is that right?"
"Yes."
"Good picks. They're polite ones." "Okay, we'll be ready to go in a moment."
He walked over to my mother and relayed something to her. She seemed uneasy, But General Ledger made motions with his hands, attempting to reassure her. Dad was a little harder to read from here. Either he wasn't bothered at all, or he was hiding it very well. The boys were led up the hidden ladder, and I paced as I waited for my turn. Along the wall, mixed in with a few guards and guests, I noticed Henry's translator standing, arms crossed, watching the scene. He bit at a fingernail, and I shook my head walking over. "Don't do that," I started, trying to be firm without being rude. "You don't want the cameras to catch you with your fingers in your mouth, do you?" He whipped his hand down immediately.
"I'm sorry, Your Highness."
"Not going up there?" I nodded toward the massive float. He smiled.
"No, Your Highness. I think Henry can wave without interpretation."
Still, I felt the nerves buzzing around him. "He'll be right beside me," I assured him. "I'll try to make sure he knows what's going on." The translator let out a massive sigh.
"That makes this far less distressing. And he's going to be so excited. He talks about you every waking moment."
I laughed. "Well, it's hardly been a day. I'm sure it'll pass."
"I don't think so. He's in awe of you. Of everything, really. The experience alone is big for him. His family has worked hard to establish themselves, and that he finds himself in a place where he can have even a second of your attention, he's so happy."
I looked up at Henry, straightening his tie as he waited on the front of the float. "Is that what he told you?"
"Not in so many words. He's aware of how fortunate he is, and he sees so many good things in you. He goes on and on."
I smiled sadly. It would have been nice if he could say as much to me. "Were you born in Swendway too?" He shook his head.
"No. First generation to be born in Ilya. But my parents are trying to hold on to our old customs and things, so we live in a small Swendish community in Kent."
"Like Henry?"
"Yes. They're becoming more and more common. When Henry was selected, his family put out a call for a reliable translator, and I submitted my resume, flew to Soda, and now I have a new job."
"So, you've only known Henry for..."
"A week. But we've already spent so much time together and get along so well. I feel like I've known him for years."
He spoke with a sweet affection, brotherly in a way. "I feel so rude. I don't even know your name." He bowed.
"I'm Eric."
"Eric?"
"Yes."
"Huh. I expected something a bit different." He shrugged.
"Well, that's the closest translation." "Your Highness?"
General Ledger called, and that was my cue. "I'll watch out for him," I promised, scurrying over to the float. The ladder was a challenge. I had to conquer it while wearing heels and holding my dress with one hand, which meant I had to let go of one rung before grabbing the next, and I was particularly proud of myself for managing that on my own. I brushed back my hair as I went to my place. Henry turned to me immediately.
"Hello today, Your Highness."
His blonde curls were lifted by the breeze, and he smiled brightly. I touched his shoulder. "Good morning, Henry. Call me Edlin." He scrunched his face, a little confused.
"Say to you Edlin?"
"Yes." He gave me a thumbs up, and I patted myself on the back for putting him beside me. In seconds, he left me smiling. I leaned behind Henry, looking between the others to find Eric on the ground, and gave him a thumbs up, too. He smiled and put a hand over his heart like he was relieved. I faced Hale. "How are you today?"
"Good," he said tentatively. "Listen, I wanted to apologize again for yesterday. I didn't mean to."
I waved my hand, stopping him. "No, no. As I'm sure you can imagine, this is a bit stressful for me."
"Yes, I wouldn't want to be in your shoes."
"I would want to be in yours," I exclaimed, looking down. "I love these."
"Thank you. Do they work all right with the tie? I like to experiment, but I'm starting to second guess."
"No, you make it all work." Hale beamed, thrilled to be past his first impression and on to the second. So, it was you who said you'd prove yourself to me each day, yes?
Indeed it was.
He seemed pleased, I remembered. And how will you do that today? He considered.
If you feel the slightest bit unsteady, my hand is here for you, and I promise not to let you fall.
I like that one. You think you've got it bad? Try this in heels.
We're opening the gates, someone called. Hold on!
I waved goodbye to Mom and Dad, then grabbed onto the bar surrounding the top of the float. It wasn't too far of a drop if someone fell, but for the five of us across the front, there was a chance we'd get flattened by the float if we did. Hale and Henry were steady, just as I'd hoped, but plenty of the others clapped or shouted out self-encouragements. Burke, for one, kept yelling, "We've got this," even though all he really had to do was stand and wave. The moment the gates opened, the cheering erupted. As we rounded the corner, I could see the first camp of cameras filming every second. Some people had signs supporting their favorite selected boy, or were waving the Ilian.